MSO News Sports, connecting you to North Shore news and sports. This is North Shore Today with Rick Moore.
Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber, supporting local news coverage and communities on the North Shore. This is North Shore Today for Monday, March 10, 2025. Local nonprofits in Gloucester are aiding residents displaced by a fire. Danvers Town Manager finalists down to two. Mostly sunny, breezy, low 50s. High tide Gloucester Harbor, 9:13 a.m. and 9:58 p.m. A weekend fire in Gloucester displaced a total of 14 residents, with 5 from 84 Washington Street and 9 from 86 Washington Street. The American Red Cross is assisting all displaced residents. No injuries occurred to residents or firefighters. Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith recommends contacting Open Door and the Red Cross, among others, for anyone who wishes to contribute to those who have lost their homes and their belongings.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Red Cross was great. We got a hold of them yesterday, and they got out to take care of it. So we had a total of four families, right, two in each building. There was, the family in the upper level of 84 was a family of four, and a single gentleman in the lower level. And then I believe it was five, and four was the split on the family in 86. And so the Red Cross was able to get out and give them that initial level of immediate support, so they have some funding and an ability to get to, temporary shelter, whether at a hotel or what have you, and get some clothes and food and whatnot till they can start to sort through this with the rest of whatever resources they have, whether that be, renter's insurance, homeowner's insurance, to get through the rest of this and get back to their life, literally. For local residents to chip in, I know Open Door had reached out this morning already through the mayor to try to, track down who are these folks and what could they do to help. And so those resources, the people in town that do that best, are really those social service organizations versus the city. They have the ability to quickly and efficiently collect either, clothing or food, and if people want to make donations, that type of thing, that is really the best source to go to. So I would say anybody in town that has the, wants to help and wants to jump in there and pitch in for this family, that's awesome. Reach out to the people that you normally deal with for donations to help others in the community in need, because they are really good about getting a hold of us and getting a hold of these families to help support them when they have these kind of tragedies in their life. So Open Door is a great resource. I'm sure Action will be able to jump in there and help to whatever degree. But there's, the Gloucester Fund, there's several different, organizations in town that do this, and they can often pivot and set up, special accounts and take in cash donations or gift cards if people want to give them, and then get those things distributed in, in a fair and equitable and appropriate way. Much really better than the city can do that. We just don't really have a mechanism to take in, especially funding, just because of the bureaucracy of government. It works better through those organizations that do it all the time and every day.
That's Gloucester Fire Department Chief Eric Smith. Buck Anderson reports in the Salem News. The three finalists were just revealed earlier in the week, but the pool of candidates to become town manager in Danvers is now down to two. Select Board Chairman Dan Bennett confirmed on Friday that Patrice Garvin, one of the three finalists for the job, has withdrawn her name from consideration. Bennett told the Salem News he was notified Thursday that Garvin, who is the Belmont Town Administrator, had pulled out of the running after the Belmont Select Board offered her a pay raise of about $8,500. More news after this break.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Yes, we are a full-service lumber yard, but we also offer doors and windows and kitchen cabinets. Please visit us in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Taparo Capital Management. It's time to craft your retirement plan. Click on the Taparo banner at the top right of our website and begin creating your winning game plan.
It's Dom Nicastro from the North Shore Sports Desk and Merrimack Valley Sports Desk, my two podcasts on MSO News Sports. Catch new episodes every Thursday morning. Follow me at Dom Sports Desk for the latest updates and find our shows at MSONewsSports.com.
During his most recent Mayor's Corner podcast this past Thursday, Newburyport Mayor Sean Reardon updated the ongoing budget process.
So now that the state of the city is over, like, what's next, right? Like, I mean, again, this is an incredibly busy time of year. Well, the biggest thing that we're going to start working on is the budget, right? So all of our department heads have been working on their budgets. Last week, they had a deadline of turning in their capital improvement plans. And again, we're doing a whole new capital improvement plan process this year. So it's funny, we had a department head meeting today, and we kind of talked about that. And for the most part, it was very positive, the reviews we got about the new way we're going to do the capital improvement plan. Just to recap, the city council actually voted down last year's capital improvement plan, which in theory doesn't do anything. It just makes us work off the old plan. So after that vote, we wanted to try to work with council and come up with something that was more prioritized for them, right? Because we have a lot of projects that fill that capital improvement plan. So what this will do, this is actually going to really drastically reduce the numbers of projects that you see fall into that five-year capital improvement plan. And then all of these extra projects, right, or these projects that could happen at some point, but just beyond 5 years, will fall into the appendix. And then they'll actually get to see like how these projects were scored between the department heads. So there's actually a scoring rubric that goes along with it. So it's actually really great. I mean, it's actually pretty innovative. There's not a whole lot of cities and towns doing something like this. What Ethan Manning and Kim Turner did was look at what other communities were doing, but pull little pieces from all of that. And so it's kind of unique to Newburyport. So we're hoping it's well received by the city council this year because a lot of work has gone into it. And it's actually validating for us because a lot of the scores that we're seeing kind of validates where we think those projects are, right? And again, you know, for example, we have a lot of water projects out there, right? And I think everyone knows the number. It's like $68 million worth of projects. That number is probably more around $30 million because a lot of those projects won't be done ever or certainly not done in the next 5 years. So those types of things will be put in the appendix. But we can talk about that more during budget season.
That's Newburyport Mayor Sean Reardon. Michael McHugh's reporting in the Salem News. The Whole Foods on Brimble Avenue in Beverly is suing its landlord, site developers, and contractors for negligent construction, alleging the store is sinking into the ground. Due to the alleged structurally unsound foundation, the Whole Foods store that was built on a former landfill and opened in 2019 has seen extensive property damage, including glass windows spontaneously shattering, damage to doors, the separation of walls from the ceiling. It also sustained a significant number of visible cracks in the floors and walls, as well as damage in the parking lot and common areas, according to a lawsuit filed January 30 in federal court in Boston. Ethan Foreman's reporting in the Gloucester Times. The Blimmin Bridge, also known as the Cut Bridge, will be closed to boat traffic Sunday through March 31 for repair work by the state, with the work to begin again in November. The bridge carries traffic on Western Avenue, Route 127, over the Blimmin Canal. During repair work, vehicles would be able to cross the drawbridge, but boats heading to and from the Western Harbor to the Anasquam River would not be able to use the canal. On April 1, the drawbridge will resume normal operations to limit the impact on scallop fishermen. The remaining work is tentatively scheduled to resume in November. In North Shore sports, the Masconomet boys basketball team has made it to the MIAA Division II state semifinals. Friday, they knocked off Mansfield, 63-55, to improve to 21-1 for the season. The Chieftains will be playing today against number 6 seed Somerset Berkeley at UMass Boston. Tip-off is at 5 p.m. The Rockport boys basketball team fell to Westport on Saturday, 59-46, in an MIAA Division V quarterfinal game. Senior captain Josiah Whitley led the Vikings with 12 points and 12 rebounds. The Georgetown boys basketball team is headed to the Final Four in Division IV. Over the weekend, they eliminated Clinton 49-48. They'll face number 2 seed Bourne this evening at 6:30 at Emmanuel College. The St. Mary's boys basketball team is on to the Final Four in Division III, winners over Abington on Saturday, 74-43. They'll take on Old Rochester on Tuesday. In girls basketball, number 1 seed St. Mary's takes on Pittsfield in a state semifinal this afternoon at 5 o'clock at Worcester State. And the Winthrop boys hockey team will play this week at the Garden for the Division IV state title against Dedham. Saturday, the Vikings took down top seed Stoneham 5-1. Celtics and Bruins were both off yesterday. The Celtics host the Jazz tonight. The Bruins will host the Panthers tomorrow night. For our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and our media director, Bill Newell, I'm Rick Moore, MSO News Sports. Thanks for checking in.
North Shore Today is a daily local news and sports podcast delivering updates from around the region, powered by Moynihan Lumber, supporting local news and sports coverage. Our website features breaking news, community updates, and feature interviews giving voice to the North Shore. Check out the area's top weekly sports talk shows, the North Shore Sports Desk and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk, hosted by Dom DeCastro, produced by Kelly Media. MSO News Sports, connecting the North Shore.
I almost called you Coach. Chief, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay, very, very well. I want to start, Chief. We got the press release on yesterday's fire on Washington Street in Gloucester, and it looked like a really tough fire, and obviously a terrible thing for the homeowners. But the conditions, low humidity and high winds, not only that, but also the close proximity of the houses there on Washington Street, it must have made it very difficult for your team.
Yeah, it was definitely a big challenge. I was out of town about an hour out of town, a little more than that actually, by the time I was able to get over there. So, thankfully we get a lot of great people that are running it and working there and do a fabulous job every day. So, a lot of thanks to them for keeping this to just the one structure. For the most part, unfortunately, the neighbor that, as you said, some of those homes are in pretty close proximity. So the one that was the closest was not only the closest, but it was actually the area of origin of the fire that started on the outside of the house. So we're still looking into what the actual cause is and the investigation. So State Fire Marshal was out working with our fire inspector to try to kind of sort out, you know, what was the cause of this thing. We know where it started in general, you know, outside in the rear of the property, in the area, in the vicinity of the elevated decks, and some of the way the additions and construction are on the back made it very difficult, very, very different kind of construction, you know, old school New England stuff that gets slapped onto old houses, which really makes our jobs tough. I get people, you know, need to do what they got to do to improve their homes and their environment, but sometimes the way it's done is not very helpful for managing a fire. And a fire that starts on the outside and literally eats its way through those materials and gets into the house, it's taken a hold of the structure in a big way, and so we're already behind the eight ball when we get that call, and that's the point at which we got notice on this one, is that, you know, there's already an outside fire with a really good head start that was eating its way into the structure. And, you know, the homeowner on the second and third floor, one family that occupies those two levels, you know, saw the fire, out the windows, and it was fully involved outside and already breaching into those walls. If they're smelling smoke on the inside with the level of winds we had yesterday, that's because it's getting into the walls. Otherwise, nobody noticed the fire as it burnt outside for the number of minutes that it burned before it got that big. So that, you know, kind of tells me that smoke is getting moved along so quickly that they didn't even notice it until that fire had really, really got into the structure.
Chief, tell me about the chronology of your team and who was in charge first, because I know when you hear about a fire and then you hear a second alarm call, third alarm call, and then you get help from all over the community. So who was leading the way for you guys, and what was the chronology of deciding when you go second and third alarms?
Yeah, so that's, those things are pretty much play themselves out pretty quickly for the deputies that are on duty. Whether that's a captain in the acting capacity of a deputy or the normal shift commander, deputy chief. So Deputy Chief Phil Harvey was in charge yesterday. His group was on duty. As soon as they arrived, they found that heavy outside fire involvement, actually in the neighboring address from where the original call came in through 911, told us it was 86. But the fire itself actually originated, and the bulk of the fire was at 84. The damage to 86 was due to exposure to that heat and flame. And so, yeah, so Phil maintained command the entire time. Like I said, Bob and I, Assistant Chief Rivas, returned in, as well as Deputy Chief LaGrande to assist him in that, along with other callback personnel and officers. But in those instances, when we're down under a fourth, fifth alarm, we typically maintain command with the original incident commander that took command. We come in and we fulfill roles that need to be done to kind of expand that incident command system. Safety officers and division officers that are around the building taking charge of different portions of the operation to kind of reduce that span of control back to a manageable handful of people to talk to, so to speak, for the incident commander. So Phil remained in that role. We filled in where it needed to be done. That fire transitioned fairly quickly from a transitional attack, meaning fighting it fairly offensively, but from the outside, not inside the building. So they initially tried to get in interior and do an interior attack, but because the windows had already broken out and there was such heavy fire on the outside, the wind was driving that fire into the home, and so crews could, and it was driving that fire right at the crews. And now that they have a door open, you just created a channel for all that heat and fire to chase more oxygen and fuel, and it's coming right at you like a freight train. So, needless to say, they weren't in there long trying to engage in that fight and were driven out by the heat and the fire. Re-engaged it on the outside to put the bulk of it down, and then tried to re-engage again back on the inside. But by that time, this is an older home. Like I said, the construction was difficult with the additions, but we're pretty sure it's an old balloon frame home, and without fire stopping, and you're talking fire, once it's in the walls, then it's getting into the floors, it's running all the way up the walls into the attic, and fire spread is everywhere. And unless you have a lot of people and a lot of lines in the building quickly, you're just not going to get that under control. You don't even really have a chance. And with the wind driving it right at the entry point for the crews, it's one of those situations where we know all the residents are out. We just can't take that high of a risk with our personnel. So, be it as it may, and they gave it a really solid try on two separate, if not more than that, entries. But just the conditions with the wind were really, really the problem with trying to be able to stay offensive and interior.
Can you explain to me, Chief, about the electrical outage? Because power was out in the neighborhood for quite a while. So what danger did that entail, or how did that transpire?
Yeah, so that was an intentional power cut that we had done in order to make operations in those two buildings safer. In fact, the property at 86, part of the issue with that was not only the exposure to the heat and fire on the outside that started melting the siding and scorching the outside of the house, getting up into the soffit, into the attic, but it also damaged electrical on the home and shorted some things out and started to create a secondary electrical fire interior to the home. So, we just need to get the power off in the entire area to make it a safer operation and to not extend what was already going on at 86. So killing the power had to happen up the street by grid, so it took out obviously a pretty large area, and then we were able to, once we could safely disconnect the power from those individual homes, from the lines coming off the primaries down to the feeders into the house, that was done by National Grid for us, and then they restored energy to those lines. And they held off on that a little bit to give us more of an opportunity to kind of try to get in and hit hot spots from the outside, because the interior staircase was burnt out in that house, probably not even halfway through that whole initial firefight because the intensity of the fire. So going from the second floor to the third floor wasn't even an option. And obviously with that kind of interior damage, floor joists were compromised, the staircase is burnt out, we just can't put people in there. And now we can't access the inside of this box. And because of the intense wind, the fire was not burning in its normal method, right? It was burning, horizontally, versus vertically. Mm-hmm. So we're getting fire movement and heat movement that's getting pushed with the wind through the house from the back of the house towards Washington Street, instead of the usual that would have been running up the back of the house and up into the attic space and that exterior rear wall, where we could come in from the inside and just hammer away from the inside after we knock it down on the outside. But that fire was getting pushed and driven and fed by that high intense wind. It was kind of like a wind tunnel back there. As windy as it was all over town, the way the homes are positioned there and where these openings on this house were, it was like a blowtorch for our folks trying to get in there.
Yeah, what video I saw, that's exactly how it would be described. Finally, Coach, Chief, I know that everybody is safe. Obviously, devastation to the residents. I read that the Red Cross is involved in helping them. The city of Gloucester is a community that gets together when something happens like this. So, in your experience, is there a way for Gloucester neighbors to maybe chip in and give aid to the people who were displaced?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Red Cross was great. We got a hold of them yesterday and they got out to take care of it. So we had a total of four families, right? Two in each building. There was, the family in the upper level of 84, was a family of four and a single gentleman in the lower level. And then I believe it was five and four was the split on the family in 86. And so the Red Cross was able to get out and give them that initial level of immediate support. So they have some funding and an ability to get to, temporary shelter, whether at a hotel or what have you, and get some clothes and food and whatnot till they can start to sort through this with the rest of whatever resources they have, whether that be, renter's insurance, homeowner's insurance to get through the rest of this and get back to their life, literally. For local residents to chip in, I know Open Door had reached out this morning already through the mayor to try to, track down who are these folks and what could they do to help. And so those resources, the people in town that do that best, are really those social service organizations versus the city. They have the ability to quickly and efficiently collect either, clothing or food, and if people want to make donations, that type of thing, that is really the best source to go to. So I would say anybody in town that has the, wants to help and wants to jump in there and pitch in for this family, that's awesome. Reach out to the people that you normally deal with for donations to help others in the community in need, because they are really good about getting a hold of us and getting a hold of these families to help support them when they have these kind of tragedies in their life. So Open Door is a great resource. I'm sure Action will be able to jump in there and help to whatever degree. But there's, the Gloucester Fund, there's several different, organizations in town that do this, and they can often pivot and set up, special accounts and take in cash donations or gift cards if people want to give them, and then get those things distributed in a fair and equitable and appropriate way. Much really better than the city can do that. We just don't really have a mechanism to take in, especially funding, just because of the bureaucracy of government. It works better through those organizations that do it all the time and every day.
That's Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.